My name is Russell Spatz. I'm an alcoholic. I'm a member of the Carl Gables Group. It's great to be here. This is going to be the last part of a three-part series. I really had a good time and enjoyed myself coming up here. I've seen a lot of people that I know for many years. And is that for me? A lot of people I've known for many years, and it's always good to meet new friends. I want to mention Paul E. I know he has a spy series up in New York. I know he's flying down. That's it. I just want to mention him. I told him I don't have much to say about him, but I told him I'd mention him. So, and he called me up on the way over here just to make sure I would mention him. So, he's been mentioned. The way this thing sort of happened and the way this worked out, I haven't found necessary to have a drink since January 17th, 1981. And well, they say AA is like a giant toolbox. There's a wrench to fit every nut that walks through the door. And I have my, you know, there are different people, different strokes for different folks, different people for, you know, different people. And the way this deal happened, one of the things that I am always very much interested in when I do the steps, if you see me do the steps or when I talk at meetings, is although I love newcomers sponsoring newcomers and being with newcomers is not only important for me, it's really something, it's a wonderful thing when there's a newcomer in the room. What I really have a heart for is two things. Number one, working with guys that have many years and who are maybe not doing so well or need some help. I'm talking about physical sobriety. Dealing in what I would call the area of what we refer to as emotional sobriety, or what Bill Wilson spoke to of the next frontier. And so I always like to speak in those areas. I find that when I get into those areas, and when you get into areas where you're dealing with emotional sobriety, you're getting into areas that are not necessarily usually covered at AA meetings. The interesting thing is they're extremely important. You know, in AA we have a saying that the most important guy in the group is the guy with the youngest guy, the guy with the newest sobriety, and that's true. But what our tendency to do is, and I understand this, is to make sure the meeting is focused on the lowest common denominator, the newest guy, and God forbid somebody should get up and talk about, quote, advanced AA or emotional sobriety. And when you get into that, you're going to be talking about God. Whether you like it or you don't like it, you're going to be talking about God and your relationship with God. And the funny thing is, that part of the deal, which is the most important part, especially for guys that have been around for a while, not only is there disdain in talking about it, but if you talk about it, you actually risk people getting upset. Because, you know, alcoholics are upsettable. And in any event, this is an area I like to speak to. You know, after being around for many years, I sponsor a lot of guys. And I sponsor a lot of guys with 20 years plus. And although you might not know it, because in an AA room, if a guy has 20 years or 15 or 19 or 25 years and they talk or whatever we do at AA meetings, you know, it may not be evident to you. When they come to me, it's evident to me that they're not happy with their sobriety. And that is not to say that I'm in any way perfect. You know, one thing that, or like I've got this thing down, or I even know what I'm talking about. You know, I talk for an hour, or whatever it is, you leave, you get something about it, fine. You don't get something about it, whatever it is, this is how AA works. You know, we got no gurus in here or anything like that. The bottom line is thank God, if you're looking for somebody perfect, that is not a qualification for being a mentor, or else Bill Wilson, who was, you know, popping LSD, you know, to try to get okay. I mean, I'm not putting him down. I love Bill Wilson, is right. But I'm saying Bill would be the first one to say, I'm not, he was suffering from depression, I'm not perfect. I've met nobody in AA that's perfect. I'd never say to you, I've got these things down. I mean, you know, I tell you that, and 5 minutes from now, you catch me in the parking lot having a tizzy fit or something. And, you know, I got my own deals going on. But I do feel it's important to talk about emotional sobriety. And so that's what I decided to use this venue to do. I had three sessions, and so I was inspired. Now, the first two, I passed around the room. We talked about the symptoms of a spiritual awakening, and I passed that around the room again. I'm not going to talk about those now. I talked about that in the first two meetings. What I want to talk about is really the letter that inspired what I wanted to talk to you about today and really inspired the first three things. That's a letter, the first three talks, the three talks I'm giving now. And that is the letter written by Bill Wilson. And if you're on my email list, I sent this down to you. You got the letter. If you're not, if you give me your email, I'll be happy to send it to you. I've got one copy, you know, here you can have for one person, and then I'll send you the letter. This was a letter written by Bill Wilson in 1958. I don't pretend to fully understand it. You know, this is like God as you understand him. I understand it the way I understand it. I'm not saying I understand it the way Bill Wilson understood it, you know, or whether maybe he might walk in here, if he could walk in here if he was alive, and he might say, you know, Rush, you got that all wrong. And you're going to, or he might say, hey, you're right on point. But the point is, you're going to understand it the way you understand it. I know enough about AA to know that if there's 100 people in the room tonight, there's 100 different stories being said. There's 100 different things. One of the things you see in AA, amazing things, is you'll be given a talk to a group of, you know, 500, 1,000, whatever it is, people. And after the meeting, they'll come up to you. And maybe you talk for an hour, for 60 minutes. You say a lot in 60 minutes. And one guy will come up to you and say, you know, when you said this, that really, and he'll pick up one sentence. The only thing he heard was one sentence that was so meaningful to him. And the next guy will come up, he says, you know, I can't believe when you talked about it. And this guy will talk about a completely different sentence and how it meant a completely different thing to him. And then a third guy will talk about some other sentence. You'll have 20 people come up to you, talk about 20 different sentences, and maybe only 10 of them you actually said. Yeah. That's great when they talk to you about stuff that they really heard that really knocked them out that you didn't even say. So you start realizing, before you start patting yourself on the back and doing a really great job, that all you can do here is try to carry the message. And if you get up here and try to do the best job you can, don't worry about carrying it. God's going to do with these people what God's going to do, and they're going to hear whatever they're supposed to hear. And it's more where they're at and what they allow to come in. You know, I mean, listen, I wish I had the power. You know, there's only one who has power. That one's God. Find him now. I don't have the power. That's why it says I can't manage my life. That's why it says no human power can do it for me. It says God couldn't, would if he were sought. God has the power to do this darn thing. You know, I could be talking to a guy and his eyes might light up. And he might say, I love AA. And I may say, wow, I am the greatest 12-stepper in the world. And I go to the next day to talk to another guy, and I give him the same speech, the same talk, the same whatever, and he says, I don't need to listen to this bullshit. Same talk, same disease, same deal. Bill Wilson spoke to people for 6 months after he got sober. Couldn't get one of them sober. So, you know, I'm just going to throw out for you some things in here that have to do with this letter that Bill Wilson wrote. I'm going to read you a couple of things, and we're going to be all over the place. We're going to talk a little about mentorship, about idolatry. Where's the rabbi? He left. He would have liked that one. Which really has a lot to do with AA and what we're talking about in here and the next frontier. Bill Wilson said, after the alcohol, is anybody in here drinking tonight? You know, isn't that funny? That's the way it is with most AA meetings. I've been to like 10,000 of them. Nobody's drinking. Now listen, after the alcohol, it's all about unhealthy dependencies. Most of which you don't even know you have. For instance, everything you worry about. Anybody ever worry about anything? What about the car? About the girlfriend? About the boyfriend? About the money? About the job? Because you think you need that stuff? Because you think you have to have that stuff? Because you get mad at somebody who even intimates that you don't need that stuff? That you're more than that stuff? That you're not that stuff? Why? Because you think you have something to do, who you are has something to do with your bank account? Or the girl, the guy you're with? Because you define yourself by the things that you gather up. I haven't seen any U-Hauls behind any funerals. Because you feel strongly about stuff and things and romance and people, like there's go out of the seventh step. that your whole life and every thought you have in your body, except maybe for a nanosecond when you're in an AA meeting, is about thinking about that stuff. After the drinking, it's all about unhealthy dependencies. We come in here totally dependent on alcohol. We get rid of the alcohol, and it's all about unhealthy dependencies, most of which we don't even know we have. And if somebody tries to explain to us that that's the problem, we think they're crazy because the entire world is all addicted to them. They're all on TV and television. You say, I must be crazy because everybody else thinks just the way you do. But that's why everybody else is also suffering. That's why most people live lives of quiet desperation. So when you understand that, you'll understand a little bit about what Bill Wilson is talking about. He wrote this in January of this was written in January 1958. Now, the 12 and 12 was published in 1953. So this was written 5 years after the 12 and 12. He had 18 years sobriety. When he wrote this one, he had 23 years. But some of this stuff he learned later on in his sobriety. It wasn't the first year or 2 years or 3 years or 5 years. Sometimes it takes time to see some of these things. And so I'm going to read this. I'm going to read the whole thing to you. And then we're going to go through it, not necessarily paragraph by paragraph, but there's certain things I want to touch upon. But before I get into that, I want to read you something. It's called mentorship. I've had some incredible sponsors. I've had three sponsors. And besides sponsors, I've known some unbelievable men that I hung out with. I heard a guy once say, the man you'll be or the woman you'll be in the next 5 years will be totally dependent upon the books you read and the people you hang out with. And really, the books I read are dependent upon the people I hang out with, who I associate with. You know, really, the truth is, who I associate with tells you more about me than anything I say to you. You just watch who I associate with. And who I associate with is who I look up to. You know, even in the very beginning, the step before the step, before the first step, you know what it says? It says you're not even ready to take the steps unless you want what we have and you're willing to go to any length to get it. It says, if you want what we have and are willing to go to any length to get it and desire it so much, you'll go to any length to get what we have, then you're ready to take certain steps. So if I say to you, do you want to take the steps? And you say, yeah. I said, well, what do you want? You say, I don't know. You're not even ready because you don't even have a we yet. Because if it says, if you want what we have, that presupposes that you have a person or a group of people, and none of us are on a pedestal, but let's face it, this is passed down from person to person. Bill passed it down to Bob. Bob passed it down, and they loved him. This is about finding somebody who excites you, who inspires you, who they may have all the flaws in the world, like my sponsors that did, but I saw something in them. I couldn't define it. I know I wanted to be exactly like them. I wanted what they had. If you said, well, what do they had? I said, I don't know what they have, but I want it. You know, I wanted it. And I was willing to go to meetings. I was willing to take humiliation. I was willing to have people tell me to do things I didn't want to do. I was willing to do them because I wanted to hang out, because I wanted what they had. So somehow along the line, as you gather up in here, supposedly, You come upon a group of people or one person or five people who you say, I like those guys. Now, some people that never happens to. They don't want what we have. They may hang around here for many reasons. There's a lot of reasons people hang around here. You know, to get the court cases signed. I'm not saying anything. You got a lot of people doing that end up getting this thing. There's people that come in here to get back into the big bed or get back into their house or get their marriage together. There are people that are in here, but they got their cell phones on because what they're really thinking about is what's going on out there. Because the cell phone might go on, because what they really want is they don't want what we have. They want what they had. They want to go back. They're thinking about what the guys are doing out in the bars. They want to go to the ball game. They don't want what's in here. They can't even believe they even have to listen to this stuff. People come to AA for all sorts of reasons. You used to have to be sponsored in. You know, you just have to be screened. We have no screening committee here. They come in here ready. They come in here not ready. And one of the great things that I had is I had mentorship. And you know, really, I'm the one who chooses my mentorship. It's not the mentor. I know, you know, you go there, you look for a perfect sponsor. So I just want to read this. It says, you need to go where you can be fed, where you can get fed. If you want something someone has, you need to expose yourself to their thinking and their discipline. You will become and be influenced by who you associate with. You think that's true? You will become and be influenced by, you know, it's like your mom used to say, you know, you hang out with those bums, you lie down with dogs, you get up with fleas. Strong mentorship is a key to progress. It fosters and maintains discipline, obedience, and continuity of effort. And if you know anything, alcoholics don't like to obey. They don't like to follow instructions. They don't like to take orders. Most people do not succeed because they are dilettantes. Now I'm going to define that word for you in case you've never heard it before. You'll like this. You've probably heard of you might even identify with this. A dilettante is a noun. An amateur or a dabbler, especially one who follows an art or branch of knowledge sporadically, superficially, or for amusement only. You know, it's funny, in AA and Vision for You, it says anybody can come in here and be cordially welcomed if they mean business. How many people really mean business? And how many people just want to just go out into the parking lot and have a cigarette? How many people really want to be here and really interested in what's going on? Most people do not succeed because they are dilettantes. They choose to be not seriously mentored. They choose their mentors with that in mind, to be left to themselves, or choose to what degree they will submit to their authority or example. You know, I've never said no. I don't think I've ever said no to somebody who says, will you sponsor me? Because I'm available. I'm an AA. I don't say no. I'm available. That's the thought. I don't know what fellowship you're in. I'm an Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm available. But you'd be surprised. You could say yes to 1,000 people. You're only getting 2 calls. I can't tell you how many people say, will you sponsor me? And then they call me. What did I say? Just come on down to me. And say, well, I can't make it this weekend. Well, I can't make it that. I can't make it. You know, it's the people that expose themselves to what you have. That, you know, it's funny. I come up here. I'm in South Dade. I'm 50 miles away. I do step meetings up here all the time and in Boca and things like that. It's often I'll have somebody come up and they say, will you sponsor me? And I'll say, sure. And he says, so what do we do? I said, well, I have a meeting on Saturday. Why don't you drive down to where my meeting is? He says, well, that's far. I'll let you think about that for a second. I say, yeah, it is. My life is marked by following. Yeah, you remember that movie, that TV show, Kung Fu? Anybody ever watch that show, Kung Fu? If you haven't watched it, you may not get this, but the very first episode of Kung Fu, pop culture, what happens is you got the Shaolin Temple, and apparently, I guess once a year, once every 10 years or whatever, they take like an individual in to become a Shaolin priest. And they only take the best of the best of the best, however they figure it out. And they show these 60 kids outside the Shaolin Temple, seeing they're all like 8, 9, and 10 years old. And they sit there, and the blazing sun, the heat, there's blizzards, there's rain, there's stuff going on, and all of a sudden the 60, after about what seems like a week, now there's only like 5 left. And then after, you know, a blizzard and grizzly bears, whatever the heck has come down, all sorts of nature, another week goes by and there's only 2 left. And then after, you know, the elements hit them again in a rainstorm and a thunderstorm, there's only 1 left. And the thunderstorm keeps on going, rain keeps on happening, he's just sitting there, and a week later, then all of a sudden the doors open up, and that's the kid that gets in. There's no difference between the Shaolin priesthood and AA. Many are called, but few are chosen. 0.5% stay sober for more than 20 years, and not many guys who 20 years are happy, or have their crap together. I mean, that's just the way it is. You know, that doesn't mean anybody can't do it. And I'm going to read you something from Bill's writings. My life is marked by following mentors who guided me into various spiritual exercises, which sometimes lasted years, and in submitting myself to their tutelage, usually into areas I did not wish to go. If you like your sponsor, if he tells you things all the time that make you feel good, you might want to think about getting another sponsor. Nah. Cancel that out. You probably have a wonderful sponsor. But I'll tell you one thing. You know, when you're dealing with a disease that's going to kill you because you're crazy and you don't think you're crazy and you're arrogant and you have all these old ideas that you think are right and you're selfish and self-centered and you come into a program that's designed to bend that bunny around and turn you around, and if you don't run into somebody that's telling you stuff that's making your skin crawl because it goes so opposite of way, your way of thinking, you may not be getting the right information. Because one would expect if you're dealing with something that's going to twist you around, you're going to probably run into somebody that's going to tell you stuff that you're not going to like and not going to want to do. Most people do not have the willingness to accede to that type of submission. Follow-up, a continuation of effort through devotion to the task, is rarely realized. Desire and actually going to any length is the key. When the pupil is ready, the teacher will appear, but readiness is seen in retrospect through actual effort, never through talk. As a matter of fact, in AA, when all is said and done, there'll be a lot more said than done. So somebody saying, I'm really going to do it this time, don't mean anything in Alcoholics Anonymous. Here's a letter from Bill Wilson. I want to read it to you, and then we'll go over it a little bit. It's kind of interesting. And as I said, this was written later on in his life. He went through a lot of depression, stuff like this. And this is called The Next Frontier, Emotional Sobriety. And I'll send this to anybody who wants it. I think, and I wish I had all, I wish I had really printed these up to pass them around so you could read it with me, but this is the best I can do right now, and I'll send it to you. I think that many oldsters who have put our AA booze cure to severe but successful tests still find they often lack emotional sobriety. Perhaps they will be the spearhead for the next... Now listen to this one. I want you to think about this. Perhaps they will be... This is Bill Wilson at 23 years. Perhaps they will be the spearhead for the next major development in AA. The next major... Now this is after the 12 and 12 has been published. After the 12 steps and the 12 traditions. They're doing all the AA meetings. You understand what I'm saying? And he says, perhaps they, these people who have had the booze cure for many, many years, who have sober many, many years, and they still lack something, emotional sobriety. He says, perhaps these people, these men, will be the spearhead for the next major development in AA. The next major development in AA. The development of much more real maturity and balance, which is to say humility, in our relationships with ourselves, with our fellows, and with God. Now, I have underneath that in red, I wrote, now when did that happen? When did that next major development happen in AA? Where in the meetings we talk about emotional maturity, unhealthy dependencies, and our relationship with God. Oh, it's probably happening somewhere. And then again, there are some meetings that you go to where if you mention God, they want to beat you up. We don't want to talk about that. But in any event, this is Bill Wilson sort of opining. Wouldn't it be nice if that might be the next development? But that might have something to do with not having a bunch of 20-year-olds or 25-year-olds sober or 15-year-olds sober in Alcoholics Anonymous who are still unhappy with their sobriety or still going through a lot of pain and aggravation. Those adolescent urges that so many of us have for top approval, perfect security, and perfect romance, urges quite appropriate to age 17, prove to be an impossible way of life when we are at age 47 or 57. Since AA began, I have taken immense wallops in all these areas because of my failure to grow up emotionally and spiritually. My God, how painful it is to keep demanding the impossible. and how very painful to discover finally that all along we have had the cart before the horse. Now, there is one area where he talks about the cart before the horse in our literature. It's on page 114. He says, in all these areas, I've had the cart before the horse. And the only other time he uses that to explain what that means, the cart before the horse, is on page 114 of the 12 and 12. And I'll read it to you. And it has to do with the area which is the most important area in AA, which is the area that is stressed in AA. It's stressed in the big book. It's the only area that's important. It's the only thing that means anything in Alcoholics Anonymous for long-term, serious, emotional sobriety. And it's talking about over and over and over in alcoholics, in our AA literature, but we don't really like to talk about it a lot at meetings. Because apparently we haven't gotten to that next deal yet that he was talking about. And this is what it says on page 114. Like most people, we have found that we can take our big lumps as they come. But also like others, we often discover a greater challenge in the lesser and more continuous problems of life. Our answer is still more spiritual development. Only by this means can we improve our chances for really happy and useful living. You know, in this book it says, unless and until an alcoholic accepts his devastating weakness and all its consequences, his sobriety will be precarious. If true happiness, he'll find none at all. So you really got to dig deep and find out what really the problem is. And it ain't booze, I can tell you. And it ain't money. And it ain't your girlfriend or boyfriend, I can tell you that. It ain't what you think it is. It ain't what you think it is. Our answer is still more spiritual development. Only by this means can we improve our chances for really happy and useful living. And as we grow spiritually, we find that our old attitudes towards our instincts need to undergo drastic revision. Our desires for emotional security and wealth, for personal prestige and power, for romance, and for family satisfactions, I guess what he's talking about is everything you think about all the time. Your entire thought life, 110%. By the way, you've been thinking about that stuff a lot, haven't you? How's that working out for you? I don't see any 18-year-olds in here. You got, what, about 30, 40, 50, 60, 70? Thinking about it for a long time, huh? Not getting any better, is it? You're trying to figure out the answer, aren't you? You've been trying to figure out the answer for 10 years about the guy, the gal, the money, the prestige, the health. You've been trying to figure that out. You'd think after 10, 20, 30 years, if it was to be figured out, you'd probably figure it out by now. You might be on the wrong track on this whole deal. You might have some old ideas that you haven't gotten rid of, maybe because you don't want to get rid of them, because you're so comfortable with them. And as we grow spiritually, we find that our old attitudes towards our instincts need to undergo drastic revision. Our desires for emotional security and wealth, for personal prestige and power, for romance, and for family satisfactions, all these have to be tempered and redirected. We have learned that the satisfaction of instincts cannot be the sole end and aim of our lives. If we place instincts first, we have got the cart before the horse. There you go. We shall be pulled backward into disillusionment. You don't even hang on to what you got. You get pulled back. You backslide. But when we are willing to place spiritual growth first, then and only then do we have a real chance. Seek ye first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all things will be added unto you. That's where we get the saying, by the way, from Dr. Bob, first things first. That's what he's talking about here. That's what we're getting wrong. Then comes the final agony of seeing how awfully wrong we have been, but still finding ourselves unable to get off the emotional merry-go-round. How to translate a right mental conviction into a right... I'm just going to go right through this, and then I'm going to say a few words, and then we'll close up. How to translate a right mental conviction into a right emotional result, and so into easy, happy, and good living. Well, that's not only the neurotic's problem. It's the problem of life itself for all of us who have got to the point of real willingness to hew to the right principles in all our affairs. Even then, as we hew away, peace and joy may still elude us. That's the place so many of us oldsters have come to, and it's a hell of a spot, literally. How shall our unconscious, from which so many of our fears, compulsions, and phony aspirations still stream, be brought into line with what we really actually believe, know, and want? I've recently come to believe that this can be achieved. I'm going to skip down. It says, you can read the rest. If I email it to you, you get a hold of it. Suddenly I realized that the matter was, my basic flaw has always been dependence. Almost absolute dependence on people or circumstances to supply me with prestige, security, and the like. Failing to get these things according to my perfectionistic dreams and specifications, I had fought for them, and when defeat came, so did my depression. Now, here's the interesting thing. He realized this. He wrote this down in the big book. In the big book, he says the A, B's, and C's are, you cannot manage your own life. No human power can relieve your alcoholism. God couldn't... All these things he's talking about here, he knew about. He realized. He spoke about. He wrote them in the big book. He wrote them in the 12 and 12. You read the 12 and 12 in chapter 7. He talks about asking. He knew about it, but he didn't realize it in himself that he was still hanging on to this stuff until now. In other words, it's possible to know something intellectually. Maybe even understand it. Maybe even communicate with others. Maybe even write it down. And so all of a sudden you're 60 years old, and then all of a sudden you're looking and saying, this is my problem. This is the problem. This is what my problem is. There's an old saying by, I forgot the writer or poet. It says, we shall not cease our exploration, and in the end we'll come back to the place where we started, having known the place for the first time. T.S. Eliot. There wasn't a chance of making the outgoing love of St. Francis a workable and joyous way of life until these fatal and almost absolute dependencies were cut away. Getting rid of old ideas. Hey, listen, you try to work with new people. I don't know how many people here sponsor people. I know I sponsor people. You know what's the hardest thing to do with people? Chopping away them old ideas. Trying to get a chisel between that guy and his girlfriend. You know? That guy and his sex life. That guy and the money. That guy in the car, that guy in the thing, trying to somehow, in some way, separating that guy or that gal from that thing that is really his God and that he's worshiping. I don't know why alcoholics have a problem with God. We worship everything else but God. We worship Cohibas, we worship Scotch, we worship Jaguars, we worship girls, we worship gods, we worship money, we worship movie stars, we worship trips, we will sell our lives, our self-esteem, our self-respect for a blouse, for a new hairstyle. I mean, we'll do anything to get these things. We worship that stuff, but I don't want to hear about the God stuff. But we'll sell ourselves down. We'll prostitute ourselves for things and for stuff and for other people. We'll prostitute our... Hey, listen. If you haven't prostituted yourself in the last 20 years at least 100 times, then you're just not an alcoholic. You're just in the wrong room. You're just in the wrong room. I said to my sponsor once, I said, I don't want to be a hypocrite. He said, too late. Because I had over the years undergone little spiritual development, the absolute quality of these frightful dependencies had never... This is a great line. Because I had over the years undergone a little spiritual development... This is after 23 years. He says, because over the years I've undergone a little spiritual development. Because I grew a little bit. I mean, listen. I told you I'm not perfect. But over the last 30 years... I've grown a little. I'm like him. I've grown a little bit. Because I've grown a little bit and I've undergone a little spiritual development, the absolute quality of these frightful dependencies had never been so starkly revealed. In other words, what he's saying is, well, because I've done this for the last 20 years or 30 years or whatever it is, I see how horrible it is now. In other words, and you'll like this, you talk about denial. If I hadn't gone this 10, 15, 20 years doing this, I'd still be involved in it, not even knowing I had the problem. How many people do you know in your life, in AA and outside of AA, are just suffering miserably, have miserable lives. They're miserable people to go around. You can't stand them. They may not be alcoholics. And they're 50, 60, 70 years old. They're never going to change. And they don't see it. You can't even talk to them. It's like talking to a wall. And they're going to die miserable. And they're never going to understand it. God forbid if you even try to brush with the most minor, basic spiritual thing that you could hardly argue with, they don't even want to hear it. Because they're so focused on other things that mean absolutely nothing. And so you come in here and you got 2 years, 3 years, 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, and all of a sudden you turn your eyes someplace else. Things mean something different. You start seeing things, you start looking at things. All of a sudden the cocktail parties get boring. The stuff that other people are talking about out there, you're not really interested in. You know, it's just sort of boring stuff. You know, you sort of see the emptiness in it all. You know what I mean? And he's saying, because this stuff has happened to him, we don't even think about this. We're the kind of people who say, we're two days sober, and we say, when am I going to feel better? The conception that maybe after 20 years of slugging along in this deal, you know, through how do we get a new perspective? Through 1,000 humiliations and the final crushing of our self-sufficiency, we get to see like a little twinkle. We didn't even think the conception that we'll be like that Shaolin priest that we might have to sit outside the temple for 25 years before we finally say, man, I never realized how screwed up I was. And then really get to start working on what the real problem is. Like we've been playing around for 25 years. That's like hard to believe. You don't even like it even as I said it. Hey, don't worry. I'm wrong. I take it back. I'm probably wrong. We're all spiritual superstars. Hard to think that you could be around for 25 years and maybe you've made kindergarten. Because over the years I've undergone a little spiritual development, the absolute quality of these frightful dependencies had never been before so starkly revealed. Reinforced by what grace I could secure by prayer, I found I had to exert every ounce of will and action to cut off these faulty emotional dependencies upon people, upon AA, indeed upon any set of circumstances whatsoever. The Apostle Paul said, I've learned the secret to be content in all things. Regardless of circumstances, how many people's lives today, how much of your life depend, how much of how you feel and your emotions, how you feel emotionally, first of all, how important it is to you how you feel, and how much is how you feel depend upon whether you have money in the bank, whether the boy likes you, whether the girl likes you, whether you're going on a trip with you, how much of how you feel depends upon basically what your material circumstances are. You know, how hostage are you to this world? Plainly, I could not avail myself of God's love until I was able to offer it back to Him by loving others as He would have me, and I couldn't possibly do that so long as I was victimized by false dependencies. In 12 and 12 it says, true independence is total dependence upon God. By the way, this little talk I'm giving, I'm doing it because I'm doing this meeting. I was asked to do this meeting. You see how many meetings you go to where they talk about this stuff. This is AA material. This is Bill Wilson after 23 years. You see how many meetings you go to where they're talking about this stuff. And I'm not putting down the meetings where you go to it and the best you're going to get to is, my mother is talking bad to me and I have bad feelings. What should I do about it? Or something like that. I'm not talking about that. You know, we got newcomers. But I'm saying how much of this stuff is really discussed in AA? It says, we know only a little. God will reveal more to you. Where are we going to go to get this stuff? You're not allowed to discuss it in AA meetings because you might have to talk about stuff that makes people nervous. And what happens in Alcoholics Anonymous with alcoholics? As we get our health back, as we get our money back, as we get our sobriety back, do we concentrate on this stuff? No. You know what we do? 90% of the people in AA concentrate on going on the exact opposite direction and going out chasing after the broads or the guys or the money or the things again to be happy. We use our God-given sobriety not to go further into the priesthood or to find out more about ourselves, to just get just enough so we can be okay, maybe get that gal, maybe get married, maybe get that house and get a promotion. Going back into the exact areas so that we become even more dependent and even more hooked in to what's going on outside into the rat race. And by the way, the rats are winning. And then we sit around at 20 years and 25 years and say, why do I feel the way I feel? Because you haven't been doing this. You haven't been doing this. You've just been staying physically sober. While these words, absolute demand, may look like a gimmick, they were the ones that helped to trigger my release into my present degree of stability and quietness of mind, qualities which I am now trying to consolidate by offering love to others regardless of the return to me. This seems to be the primary healing circuit, an outgoing love of God's creation and His people by means of which we avail ourselves of His love for us. It is most clear that the current can't flow until our paralyzing dependencies are broken, and broken at depth. Only then can we possibly have a glimmer of what adult love really is. That's why they say in the big book, first of all, we have to quit playing God. This is the archway we walk through. He is the Father, we are His children. As long as we stay close to Him and do His work well, He'll give us everything we need. What do you think? They're just talking to hear themselves talk? That's AA. We got to get rid of this selfishness. We must or it kills us. God makes that possible. You know, the book of James was a primary book. It was an essential book they used in developing Alcoholics Anonymous. In chapter 1 of James, it says, I consider it pure joy, my brothers, whenever you face trials of many kind, because you know that testing your faith develops perseverance. Perseverance must finish its work so you may be mature and complete, not lacking anything. That's all over step 7. It's all about suffering. It's all about going through. You see, the good part about it is if you stay sober long enough, and you go to AA meetings, and you try to practice the principles, whether you like it or not, you'll just get the crap knocked out of you. And so eventually, you'll either break, or be miserable, or die miserable, or you'll somehow, some way, be tapped on the shoulder as your life is going down the tubes, and you'll wind up in a meeting like this, and you'll start listening, and say, at 20 years, oh, that's the problem. Then you might have a shot at turning around. Because life's going to beat you up until you figure this thing out. Life's going to beat you up until you figure this thing out. In my first 6 months of my own sobriety, I worked hard with many alcoholics. Not one responded, yet this work kept me sober. It wasn't a question of those alcoholics giving me anything. My stability came out of trying to give, not out of demanding that I receive. Thus, I think I can work out with emotional sobriety if we examine every disturbance we have, great or small. Listen, if you examine every disturbance you have, great or small, every upset you have, great or small, we will find at the root of it some unhealthy dependency and its consequent unhealthy demand. By the way, dependent upon God is never unhealthy. Never going to hurt you. Let us, with God's help, continually surrender these hobbling demands. Then we can be set free to live in love. We might then be able to do 12-step ourselves and others into emotional sobriety. And then he says, of course, I haven't offered a new idea. I haven't made this stuff up. Only a gimmick that has started to unhook several of my own hexes at death. Nowadays, my brain no longer races compulsively into elation, grandiosity, or depression. I've been given a quiet place in the bright sunshine. All this stuff is talking about in Scripture. Under the term, it's one of the commandments under the term of idolatry. It's a biblical term. We don't like it, just like we don't like the word sins. In here, we don't use sins. They actually use it in the 12 and 12, use defects of character. But this is, none of this is new. It was 2, 6, 8, 10,000 years ago. Idols were, you know what? This is all about idolatry. That's what dependencies are about. This is the step that separates the men from the boys. Any person willing to repeatedly try step 6 on all his faults is a man sincerely trying to grow in the image and likeness of his creator. In biblical terms, an idol is something other than God that we set our hearts on, that masters or rules us, or that we serve. Here's what you do. You just think about what you think about all the time. I'll bet it's not God. I shouldn't say that. Maybe for some of you, maybe. I wish I could say I always think about it. I'll tell you, think about him a lot more than I used to think about, which is probably why I'm happy a lot of the time. Not perfectly happy, but happy a lot of the time, relatively happy. An idol is something that within creation that is inflated to function as God. All sorts of things are potential idols, depending only on our attitudes and actions towards them. Idolatry may not involve explicit denial of God's existence or character. You know, you can believe in God and still be an idol. It may well come in the form of an over-attachment to something that is in itself perfectly good. An idol could be a physical object, a property, a person, an activity, a role, an institution, a hope, an image, an idea, a pleasure, a hero, anything that can substitute for God. And this is one of my favorite quotes. The human heart is a factory of idols. Every one of us, from our mother's womb, is expert in inventing them. You know, you start thinking about what you're focusing on, what you're worrying about, and what your life is running, what's going on in your brain, and there's always at the other end of it some unhealthy dependency on something that you absolutely have, you have to need, you have to get, you cannot lose, you're upset because you don't have, and it really has absolutely nothing to do with your happiness, by the way. As a matter of fact, when you finally get the darn thing, it comes in with so many hooks of so many other problems. You know, let me tell you something. As soon as you get that car, the next thing that comes down the road is car troubles and looking for a mechanic and insurance. You know, and pay. What is it? Freedom is just another word for nothing more to lose. You know, there's a certain freedom in not having stuff. But what I'm talking about is really sort of like un-American, isn't it? And I love America. You know what I mean? But it is sort of it's not our way, is it? I mean, what I'm talking about is not on the billboards out there. You're not going to see it on TV when you go to the movies. Nobody's going to be talking about this stuff, and you're not going to be talking about this stuff because you don't want people to think you're crazy, right? I'm talking about this stuff in here because, you know, we're just a bunch of alcoholics. What does it matter? Nobody cares. You know what I mean? You know I'm crazy, but you suspect that maybe there's some truth in it. That's the scary part. Maybe. God bless you all. Thank you very much.